Welcome to the Wealth Steading Podcast, Episode 11, July 31st, 2014. In today's episode, we're going to cover a lot of news and events of the day. The markets are melting down. We had a 2% drop in the S&P. We'll be talking about that and the factors that may be affecting it. We'll be talking about all the CEOs and presidents that have been getting shifted around in retail sales and in some of the fast food restaurants, how that might impact some stock performance. We'll be talking about inflation, the dollar, International Monetary Fund, a lot of things coming up in this episode. But before we get started today, I wanted to thank all the new listeners, and since we're only into our 11th episode, we're a new podcast, everybody's pretty much a new listener. So I'd like to thank all of you. And I also have a request. If you can, I'd like you to do two things. They'll both help the show greatly. The first thing is, I'm curious how you found out about the podcast. Now, I know that some of you are my clients. Some of you probably found out about the podcast because you're subscribed to my website at investablewealth.com. But for you other people, I'm curious how you found out about the podcast. Did someone tell you about the show? Did you see it mentioned on Facebook or some other social media? If you could go to the website, wealthsteading.com, you'll see a comment section on there. If you could just type in and tell me how you learned about the podcast, that will greatly help me better understand about our listener base and how you're finding the show. If you want to, you can put in your email address, but you're not required to. I'm not trying to get a list, and accumulate a junk mail list or anything. So you don't have to identify yourself in any way if you don't want to. That's totally up to you. But I would like to understand how you found out about the show. And then also feel free to put in any other comments. Any kind of input from you will be helpful as I start to formulate new episodes. The second thing I'd like you to do is if you could go to the iTunes store and rate and review the show. Now, if you already subscribed to the podcast, this is something that's easy to do. And I'm not here to tell you how to rate or review the show. Just please be honest, whether you give us a 1-star or a 5-star, that's up to you. No matter what you do, though, it will really help attract more people to the podcast. So the more of you that can go there and rate and review the show, it will be more likely that others will find the podcast, and it'll just be better for the overall community. So I'd appreciate if you could do that. So let's jump into our first topic. I'd like to talk about what's going on with the markets and give you a market overview. Everything's been going great for about the last 6 weeks. The stock market's gone up probably close to 7% since its lows back in May. The whole month of July, we've been getting earnings reports. Most companies have already announced the earnings, and as usual, the majority of them are beating expectations. We'll talk about how that's rigged on another podcast, but let's just say that I believe something like 67% of companies have beat expectations. Corporate earnings are coming in excess of 6%. They were around 5% last quarter. To maintain the current valuations in the market, they had to be at least 5, so we're well above that. Everything's rosy. And yet today, the last day of the month, the market drops, and it drops hard, and it drops broadly. The S&P was down 2%. The NASDAQ was down 2.09%. The S&P actually crashed through its 50-day moving average, and the NASDAQ settled right on top of it. Now, the 50-day moving average, for those of you that are not familiar, is a key. We like to look at like moving averages. That way, we get an idea of where the market's at in a trend. So what I like to look at is the 10-day, the 50-day, and the 200-day. And when we talk about days, we're actually talking about trading sessions. So a 10-day moving average would be the moving average over a 2-week period, because the market's open 5 days a week, so you have 10 trading periods in 2 weeks. So the 10-day is going to give us an idea of the markets over a 2-week period. The 50-day, again, it's really 50 trading sessions, so that's going to give us an idea over 2.5 months. And because earnings are reported quarterly, right, they're reported 4 times a year, that's every 3 months, that 2.5 month snapshot really gives us a good idea what's happening with the stock or with an index, and that's why we look at the 50-day moving average. And then finally, the 200-day moving average, that basically allows you to look at where the stock or the index has performed over the last year. So today we've seen the S&P break through that 50-day moving average. That's a bad sign, and the NASDAQ is sitting right on top of it. Tomorrow's a Friday. It's the end of the week. We'll see how they react. My gut feel would be that we'll see the NASDAQ go ahead and break through its 50-day and the S&P continue their plunge, but who really knows? We have no idea of knowing. We'll just have to see how the markets open up tomorrow. But here's the point I'd like to make, and I'm going to focus right just on the S&P 500. Despite the fact that we're getting all these rosy and these excellent earnings reports, and we've already heard the majority of companies report, so there's probably not going to be any or very many surprises, we had this big market plunge today. And there were some news items we'll talk about, but none of them are really a surprise. None of them were unanticipated. None of them are really that drastic to cause this. Now, why this is so significant is because this is the third worst day of the year for the S&P 500. And actually, you could even argue it's the second worst day because the other two bad days were a tie. In early January, the S&P dropped 2.09%, and then it also dropped another 2.09%, which is interesting. And as I said earlier, the NASDAQ dropped 2.09% today as well, so something crazy about that number. But in any event, the S&P two previous days this year dropped 2.09%. That was early January and mid-April, and then today, S&P down 2%. Now, in both of those previous drops, the S&P broke through its 50-day moving average and then continued to move lower. And that's why I said that I would suspect that the S&P will continue to drop. Now, I'm just basing this on past chart history. In January, when it broke through the 50-day, over the next several weeks, it fell very hard and came close to reaching its 200-day moving average. Now, why I think we could continue to see a precipitous drop is because the S&P has been above its 50-day moving average since pretty much early May. So we've gone three full months well above that moving average, and yet today, without any really major bad news, the index broke hard and fell well below that 50-day. I don't have any final volume trading numbers for today, but it appears that not only did the market fall, but it fell in significant volume. And that's very important. You always want to look at the price action of a stock or an index, and then you'll want to look at the volume. If not that many trades are being made for the day, it could be a fluke. It's not that big of a deal. But if you see a big surge in volume, if you see a big increase over the previous day or the previous trades of that week, or above the 30 or 90-day average for volume, then you know it's significant. And it looks like today was one of the higher volume days of the year. So again, a bad sign for the markets. Now, before I get all gloomy and doomy here, I do want to put in a caveat. For the past 18 months, this market has been incredibly resilient. In fact, it's been irrationally exuberant. And it's because of the QE3 quantitative easing that the Federal Reserve is doing. Now, they've been doing this for 5 or 6 years, but these last 2 years of it with the QE3, $85 billion a month, that's a significant amount of money to be pounding into the economy every month. And so that's distorted the markets. So every time there's been just a little dip in the markets over the past 18 months, traders come right in and buy on the dips. And the market goes right back up again. So while we saw close to a 10% fall on the NASDAQ earlier this year, we've seen nothing like that on the Dow. We've seen nothing like that on the S&P 500. Generally, we're talking about a 3 to a 6% fall before people come in and buy it right back up. So who knows? The market could be up 5% tomorrow. It's totally irrational, and that's why currently I am, for the most part, out of the market. If you follow my comments over at Investable Wealth, you'll know that I've been extremely cautious for the last 4 months. And as of last week, I'm 90% in cash. During turbulent times like this, I don't take unnecessary risks. There's no reason to. What's the upside gain? The market's at near all-time highs. Earnings have already been announced. We know what they are. I don't see a huge event that's going to thrust the market up 10 or 20% in the next 3 months. However, I could see many scenarios where the market could easily drop 10, 15, 20%. I don't see any reason to be in the market. If I miss an uptrend, so be it. In a choppy or volatile market like this, I like to take my profits early and often. And I'll tell you, over nearly 30 years investing, I've never lost money taking a profit. So when we see a major fall like this, why it happened isn't really that important. Since none of us have a crystal ball, we can't really tell what's going to happen tomorrow or next week. So there's no reason to really try and predict that. There's no reason to prove that you're the smartest guy in the room. You don't need to get risky in times like this. I prefer to go to cash. I sit back. I wait. I'm very cautious. I'll see how things unfold. If you're down in Miami and you're on vacation and you plan to go out and get some sun and visit the beach, and during your vacation a hurricane warning comes in and the winds are blowing and the seas are rough, you don't go down to the ocean. That's not the day to go swimming at the beach. That's not the day to go out fishing. That's the day you stay in your hotel. You go to the hotel bar lounge. You swim in the indoor pool. You don't need to take unnecessary risks. That's the way I feel about the stock market in times like this. So as I said, there was no major one single event that could have caused the market to plunge today. There are a lot of things happening, but again, they're nothing new. Argentina defaulted today. That was no surprise. We've seen this coming for months. It's the second time they've defaulted in 12 years. They're a small, insignificant country. That's not really any big deal. It could be somewhat of a reality check, though. Investors and traders could finally be waking up to the fact that there's a lot of global debt out there. There's a big iceberg of bad debt. And with Argentina defaulting, it could prompt others. It could be what they call a contagion. Southern Europe is still a mess. We haven't heard about it for a few years, but it was back in 2011 we were hearing about all kinds of possible defaults in Southern Europe. They called those nations the pigs. You heard that term, pigs, an acronym that stood for Portugal, Italy, Greece, Spain. Well, nothing's changed over there. Their economies are still stagnant. Their demographics are in a downward spiral. They have huge public and private debt. Unemployment is at historic levels. And yet, despite all that, their bond yields have dropped precipitously to historic levels. Now, when you have dropping bond yields, what that normally means is that the economy is good, that things are great, that there's low risk, that no one's worried about a default, right? If you think a country's going to default, you want 30, 40, 50% yield. But if you think everything's rosy, hey, you'll settle for 3%. Well, for the past several months, European bond rates have just dropped. It's like it's smooth sailing, no problems. Spanish 10-year bond yields this week dropped to their lowest level in 225 years. They're getting less than 2.5% on 10-year Spanish bonds. Think of that. The lowest rate in 225 years? 3 years ago, they were worried about Spain defaulting, and nothing's changed. So maybe this Argentinian default has prompted concern. We also had an announcement this week, and this was nothing new. It just was the official number came out. A Portuguese bank is now announced that they have lost 3.6 billion euros. Now, again, this is nothing new. We know that these European banks are in shambles. We know that our own Federal Reserve has loaned money over there to prop up their banks. But with all this happening lately, maybe investors are saying, hey, what's going on? What could be next? What next bank is going to come out in default? We've also in the past month seen a couple defaults in China of private companies, and that's unprecedented. We saw the first one, I believe it was 2 months ago, and then another one announced here recently. In the past, the Chinese government has not let any private company default. Either a state or local government has always stepped in to make the bondholders whole. Now that the second company's defaulted, it looks like maybe a local province will step in to pay off the bondholders. But again, this is unprecedented in what's going on in China. We know the Chinese economy has slowed down. Their days of double-digit growth are over. They have bad demographics going forward. They have a real estate bubble over there. Their new government that has come in the past year is shaking up and doing a lot of changes. So there's a lot of uncertainty in China right now. And then for anybody that's been paying attention to the news for the past several months, we know there's a lot of geopolitical issues. And again, with the market dropping today, none of these are new. There were no new revelations. There were no new hostilities that broke out today or even this week that we haven't known about for weeks or months. There's problems all over the Middle East, Syria, Egypt. Israel has troops in Gaza. That whole Arab Spring has turned into an Arab nightmare. Libya's in shambles. None of this is new. But again, maybe investors are just starting to come around to the reality of it. Since Russia annexed Crimea months ago, there may be people worried about that and the effect that that'll have not only on Russia, but also on the economies of Eastern and Western Europe. Again, nothing new. We know this is coming. But again, maybe it's just starting to sink in. Maybe this is just one more straw that breaks the camel's back. We're also seeing a renewed concern about inflation. During the Federal Reserve's meeting this week, they announced that we're starting to get close to their inflation number, which is 2.1%. Now, those of us that buy energy or food or housing, we all know that inflation is well above that rate, but that's the official number. Wall Street has been brushing this off. They've been pointing to the fact that companies like Chipotle have been able to pass on prices to consumers without any repercussions. And yet, lately, there's renewed fears that maybe these inflation problems are going to cause problems. Consumers will not be able to absorb the price increases. And the real fear, too, has really been around employee compensation. For the last 6 years, wages have been stagnant. The hourly wage is at a 50-year low. But now Wall Street keeps bringing up the fact that, hey, maybe this labor market is tightening up. Companies haven't built into their 2015 cost models to pay for increased employee raises and bonuses. So if that does occur, if wages start going up in 2014 and into 2015, and companies haven't budgeted for it, that'll have to come directly out of their bottom line. That'll affect earnings. That worries Wall Street. I'm a little skeptical on this. I don't know that the employment market is as tight as it appears to be. We know the government finagles the numbers. We also know that a lot of people have dropped out of the job market. They're on Social Security or disability at record high numbers. They're never going to come back to the market. We also see a lot of people that are saddled with their home. Their house is underwater. There's no way they can afford to sell it. And so they're stuck in a certain metropolitan area. I think that's going to hinder job mobility. And so I don't think we're necessarily going to see the wage inflation that we've seen during previous recoveries. I also don't totally buy the inflation argument right now, and it's because I see conflicting indicators. Over the last 3 weeks, the U.S. dollar has been up. Now, the dollar's been beaten down all year long, but it's up over 2% in the last 3 weeks. At the same time, gold is down over 3%. So if there's a real inflation worry, why is the dollar up and gold is down? The other thing that's extremely unusual, and this doesn't correlate with all the geopolitical problems we see, particularly with Russia and Crimea and Ukraine, all the problems in the Middle East. Over the last 3 or 4 months, the price of oil was down over 7%. That's a significant drop. Oil was close to $1.08 a barrel. As I record this podcast, I think it closed right around $100 a barrel. It actually traded earlier in the day below $100 a barrel. So if inflation is a real concern, and if we have all these geopolitical problems, why is oil coming down? See, as an investor, I think it's important to look at these things. How are trends and how are data points reacting? Are they moving in unison? Are they moving differently than you would suspect? Whenever things are out of kilter, that's a time for caution. You can come up with algorithms or predictive theories, but whenever the data doesn't fit the model, doesn't fit the presumptions that you've built into your model or your algorithm is going to fail. And so again, when I see choppy markets like this, I don't take unnecessary risks. I remain cautious. I don't have to prove that I'm the smartest guy in the room. I'll sit back and watch and wait for things to unfold. Now, I think a lot of what might be going on and could be responsible for the big drop that we had in the market today is that people are concerned that finally the Federal Reserve is going to start raising interest rates. We saw the market stumble last year, May of 2013, when it was rumored that the Fed might start cutting back on QE3 and raising interest rates. Since December, they've been slowly cutting back on their quantitative easing, taking it from $85 billion a month down now to this month. They've just announced they're going to cut it back to $25 billion, which is still a huge amount. But they keep saying they're going to keep short-term interest rates at near zero for some time into the future. If Wall Street doesn't believe that, that may be the reason why we're seeing gold coming down and the U.S. dollar coming up. With the dollar rising, that might have some impact on the price of oil, but not at the levels we've seen, not dropping over 7% in 3 months. That's very unusual. That doesn't correlate. Now, the Fed chairwoman, Janet Yellen, she did have a conference yesterday after the Fed's meeting this week. So again, that could precipitate this market fall. And we'll just have to wait and see how the Fed reacts. In the past, whenever Yellen has made a comment that spooked the markets, within a few days, she comes back and she testifies before Congress. She walks the statement back. She calms everybody's fears. Again, that's why I say that this market has been irrationally exuberant. People are afraid the Fed's going to take away the punch bowl. The market comes down. The chairman comes out and says, oh, everything's fine. We're not going to raise interest rates. The market goes back up. The old adage on Wall Street is you don't fight the Fed. Whenever the Federal Reserve raises interest rates, you know that's going to have a negative impact on stocks. Whenever they lower interest rates, it's going to have a positive effect on stocks. It's just the way it always is, and you can't fight the Fed. Problem is that we've been at near zero for these, near 6 years now. And you really can't take it much lower unless you go negative. And so the threat is always there that it can only go up. So as the economy improves, if they raise interest rates, the concern is that the economy is still too fragile to handle that, and you'll see a collapse in things like real estate. And you can understand that. If you have someone now in this market that's struggling to purchase, say, a $300,000 home, or they can't qualify for the payments on a $300,000 home, and interest rates are only at 3.5% or 4%, how much harder will it be for these people to buy homes if interest rates go to 5%, 6%? So that's one of the concerns about interest rates. And you can't discount the power of the Federal Reserve. Since coming out of the recession, the Federal Reserve has increased their balance sheet to historic proportions. By the time they finally end QE3, the Federal Reserve's balance sheet will be about $4.5 trillion. This is a hard number to understand, but let me put this in perspective for you. So the Federal Reserve, on their balance sheet, all these bonds that they've been purchasing, all these mortgage-backed securities that they've been purchasing, that's going to amount to $4.5 trillion. Now, if you add up all the stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, that's the 30 large industrial companies in the U.S., they only come out to probably about $4.8 trillion. So in the last 6 or so years, the Federal Reserve has pumped the equivalent of the Dow Jones Industrial Average into the bond and treasury and mortgage markets. They've, in a sense, bought up the 30 biggest companies in America. Now, if you're not familiar with the Dow Jones, let me just give you an idea of some of the companies that are on the list. 3M, American Express, AT&T, Boeing, Chevron, Caterpillar, Cisco, DuPont, ExxonMobil, General Electric, Home Depot, Johnson & Johnson, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Walmart, Disney. Imagine that. The Federal Reserve has pumped in enough money to buy those 30 large corporations in America, all of them. That's why these markets are so distorted. That's why you may be having a hard time understanding what's going on with the stock market today. Now, something else that's in the news that I'd like to cover with you is the changing of the guard at several major corporations, people getting rid of their presidents or CEOs. This is something critical for you to watch as you invest in stocks. Change in leadership can have a huge impact on a company, either positively or negatively. And for example, let me just refresh your memory and think back a few years to JCPenney's. They brought in a guy named Ron Johnson as their CEO. He had a brilliant resume. He was a vice president of Target merchandising. He was a pioneer of the Apple store concept. He was thought to be a genius. Now, when JCPenney's brought him in to help revive their stores and revive their brands, it went exactly the opposite direction. They lost about $3 or $4 billion in market capitalization of their stock during his tenure as CEO. That was over 50% of the company's value. You see, Johnson just wasn't a good fit for JCPenney's. You know, his hip resume, his Apple retail store background, that just didn't fit JCPenney's. The changes he tried to implement there didn't work. There were also questions about what kind of loyalty he had to the company. He never moved to the corporate headquarters. JCPenney's is headquartered in Plano, Texas. He kept living on the West Coast. You know, he'd fly back and forth. To me, that just showed that he didn't have the level of commitment to the company. If he wasn't willing to actually move to Plano and get absorbed in the JCPenney's culture, then he was probably going to have a hard time as CEO. JCPenney's is still struggling, and who knows if JCPenney's will be able to pull themselves out of the tailspin they're currently in. But what's interesting to look at is this whole retail and fast food retail restaurant environment. There's a lot of changes, a lot of things going on there. Now, the big problem with retail and with these restaurants is the secular trends, particularly with retail. We see a lot of sales going online, people buying their products from Amazon, Amazon selling things at razor-thin margins, really not even making any money on them, just putting retailers out of business. And so as a result of this, these retailers aren't making money, and they're shaking up their management. They're you know, bringing in new presidents, new CEOs. The question is, will anybody have strong enough leadership to change things if the trend is just against them? You know, as we focus on wealth building, our sixth wealth building principle is profit from trends. Okay, so as investors, we have to be able to identify trends. Trends are real. And just because you don't like the way things are going, it doesn't mean that you can change anything. If the retail and market is moving from brick and mortar and moving more online, then no matter what kind of a CEO you bring in, no matter what kind of whiz kid this guy is, he may not be able to buck that trend. And as an investor, you don't believe the propaganda coming from the company. You don't believe all the rosy changes they say they're going to make. If the trend is against them, you need to move on. You need to look for better investment opportunities elsewhere. So we see numerous store closings, from old stodgy companies like Radio Shack and Sears to the more popular companies like Costco, Target, and this is also affecting the restaurant market, particularly in the fast food area, places like McDonald's, Burger King. We do see some of the companies like Chipotle bucking the trend, but the question is, how long can they keep that up? If the consumer is strapped and doesn't have income and is way over leveraged with debt, maybe they're just not going to be spending in these retail environments or in these fast food low-value restaurants. Target store has had particularly problems. They've just announced a new CEO there. If you remember over the Christmas season, they had a breach of security. That caused a lot of problems for them. Their expansion into Canada has been disastrous. They're bringing in a new CEO, Brian Cornell. He was on the Pepsi, he was an executive with PepsiCo on the food side of things. You know, that's their like their Quaker Oats brands, Lay's potato chips. So he's a big retail background. He was also with Walmart and Sam's Club. So right now, the interesting thing I see about Target is they're bringing in a guy with a lot of food experience, you know, snack food, junk food kind of stuff. A guy that experience at Sam's Club, which is more lower end, right, more discount. And yet Target is thought of as more chic, more trendy. They talk about raising their margins and selling higher branded items. But the CEO they're bringing in is far from that. Now, maybe they look back to JCPenney's bad experience, and so this has tempered their expectations. But we'll just have to wait and see. It appears to me, though, that Target is looking to make themselves over more like a Walmart. And Walmart's having problems right now, so that may not be a good strategy. Now, speaking of Walmart, they just changed out their CEO. I find this interesting as well. They're bringing in a guy named, I think his name is Foran. Now, he's like an Australian or New Zealand. He's got lots of global experience, lots of experience in Asia, has a fantastic resume. But what I find interesting about Walmart is they've had horrible problems executing in the past couple years. If you go into the stores, they're dirtier than usual. Product isn't on the shelf. There's long lines at checkout because there aren't enough people to check out the customers. And then Walmart puts the blame on their declining sales, saying, well, it's because the government has cut back on food stamps. But they're having problems executing. So they're bringing this guy in from Asia, who's supposedly a whiz kid. Maybe he can turn that around. We'll have to watch and see what his modus operandi is. If he can come in and streamline the operation, get back to more of a Sam Walton operation, low prices, plenty of selection. But I don't think that's what he's doing. I keep hearing about Walmart moving more to these smaller scale stores. You know, I just really don't think the Walmart shopper wants a boutique experience. I don't think the Walmart shopper is choosing between, you know, shopping at Walmart or shopping at Whole Foods. I just think it's a different demographic. And to bring in somebody from like Australia or New Zealand, I don't know. I mean, Walmart is a quintessential American company. Their target demographic is middle class America down to, you know, low income earning America. They're not trendy. They're not flashy. They're not high end. So if this guy comes in and tries to move them in that direction, I just don't see how it could work. Now, I'll tell you, here's a CEO selection that I kind of like. And that's the new guy that's running Burger King. His name is Dan Schwartz. He's young. He's only like, 32 years old or something. He's been getting a lot of press, and I don't believe any of the hype stories that come out. So we'll have to wait and really see what happens. But I do like what I'm hearing because it goes against the status quo. Now, Schwartz is supposedly some whiz kid from Wall Street. He doesn't really have any restaurant or retail experience. But he's come in hard charging into Burger King. He's brought a lot of young people with him. And it sounds like they're trying to make Burger King more of what Burger King is. It's a fast food place. You know, when you look at Burger King's clientele, when you look at their target demographic, it's kids with families that come in and eat junky food. Now, when I look at a stock to invest in, I don't look at the morality play. I mean, I assume if someone goes into Burger King and they buy a Whopper and they're eating 1,500 or 2,000 calories, you know, they're not really concerned about their diet. They're really not concerned about eating healthy. They're not concerned about organic food. This is, again, this is probably not the customer that's going to go to Sprouts or going to go to Whole Foods. They're not concerned about eating free-range chicken. And whether that's good or bad, you know, that's none of my business. I don't make a value judgment. But when you get a company that's in that marketplace and they're selling that junky garbage food and they start talking about being healthy and they start talking about how they're going to raise their sales by selling salads and, you know, getting kids to eat carrot sticks instead of french fries, they're bucking the trend. That doesn't work. That's not their customer. Yeah, kids probably shouldn't be eating that junk food, but that junk food customer, that is their clientele. They're not going to change human behavior and their sales will go down if they try. So what I like about the Schwartz guy, it sounds like he's coming into Burger King trying to make Burger King what it used to be. Fast food restaurant where you could get it, go in and get a big sloppy Whopper, you know, fries and a Coke. He's consolidating the menu. He's not trying to be all things to all people. Burger and fries, maybe some chicken strips. He's focusing on clean restaurants, getting people in and out quickly, automating the process, which will help with costs. So we'll have to see what Daniel Schwartz does with Burger King. Could be interesting. You might want to put that one on your watch list. Now I want to wrap up with two stories that don't deal with specific stocks, but do play into overall trends. I'm sure you're aware of the Ebola breakout. I think one of the major things that could disrupt our economy is a pandemic, something that happened like 100 years ago with the Spanish flu. We always get Chicken Little gloom and doom fears, you know, things about swine flu and SARS and things like that. So I don't know if this Ebola virus breakout is a real thing or not, but it is on my radar screen. I am watching it. It could have significant impacts. I mean, you think about the raw materials and products that are coming out of Africa. If there's a fear that Ebola is spreading out of Africa, that could shut down commerce, shut down air traffic, could shut down the sea lanes. It could have a major impact on the global economy. It could really hurt corporate profits. Since February, I think there's been something like 700 deaths. It's spreading outside of the historical countries in Africa that it's been in. There was a fear recently that an American citizen could have brought it back to the U.S., but he actually died before he got back to the States. So if you get somebody on an airplane that's spreading Ebola, it could be a major disaster. I mean, think of what happened to the Asian economy a few years ago with the SARS outbreak. That was something that was fairly minor and probably overhyped, but it had a major impact on the Asian economy. So watch Ebola. See what happens with it. If it ends up being a natural disaster, there'll be pros and cons associated with it. There'll probably be medical companies that profit, and there'll be other companies, maybe like consumer products, airlines, commodities companies, they could all suffer. So it could play two different directions. You need to watch that. And as I talk about in Wealth Building Principle Number 7, where we learn to profit from nature, you can't feel guilty taking profits on something like this. Whether Ebola spreads or doesn't spread, it's outside of your sphere of influence. So if you're aware of this occurring, you see the trend coming, and you decide to sell short or get out of the market or buy a medical company to make a profit, that's not pirating. That's not bad. You're not doing anything to hurt or help people that have Ebola. But if you can make money in this situation, you're more likely to be able to help the society overall. You'll be able to have a profit that you can do good with it. If you're broke and poor, you're not going to be able to help anybody. And the last thing I saw in the news that I wanted to touch on today was I noticed this week that the International Monetary Fund is really pushing the global climate change initiative. Whenever I read things like this, I always think about propaganda. I'd refer you back to Wealth Building Principle Number 8, which is to learn to decrypt propaganda. Now, you may be concerned about the environment, but here's the point of the matter. The International Monetary Fund is a part of the World Bank. It's sponsored by the U.S. It's the financial elite of the world. And I have to tell you, if you think that they're really concerned about global warming or global climate change or pollution control, then I think you're very naive. These people spend their lives jetting around the world, eating caviar, staying in the best hotels in the world, all the while they're telling you to cut back on your carbon footprint. I don't believe them for one minute. What I think it's all about is a scheme to take more of our money. And here's an example of it. The IMF announced this week that their big initiative on saving the world from global warming, you know what? You guessed it. More taxes. They finally put a number on that, and it looks like that the world tax for U.S. citizens on a gallon of gas could be as much as $1.60 a gallon. Okay, now right now, what are you paying at the pump? $3.75? And with that, you're already paying probably a dollar or more of state and federal taxes. And now the World Bank, the IMF, they want to charge you another $1.60 a gallon. What do you think that's going to do to the economy? Where do you think that money's going to go? Do you think that's going to go help anybody? Or do you think that's going to go into the pockets of a bunch of bureaucratic elites to give them more power, more control over your life? Well, with that, I wish I would end on a happier note, but that's what I have for you today. Well, questions are starting to trickle in from our listeners, so the next episode will probably be a show where I answer listener questions. I'll be keeping an eye out on the market and report that back to you as well. As always, I appreciate you listening. Send your comments and questions over to us at wealthsteading.com. I wish you the best of returns. This is John Pugliano.